Jones.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special hour of Your Call. Today we are talking about the accreditation crisis at City College of San Francisco. Tomorrow marks the deadline for the college to submit a report advocating for why it should remain open. Since July, City College has had to make massive changes to its infrastructure and spending in order to adhere to the Accrediting Commission's guidelines for improving the school. It's been 8 months since the commission visited CCSF, and that's when they announced possible plans for closure and loss of accreditation. Being an accredited institution allows the school to receive state and federal funding and for credits to be transferable. City College was accused of having too broad a mission statement and giving too many benefits to faculty, neither of which could be supported by the school's dwindling budget. There were also problems found with the school's leadership in that their shared governance system was too complex. Many students and teachers have been protesting the changes being made to CCSF. They argue that the cuts and consolidation of departments will make the school weaker in the long run. But how much of the lack of funding is City College's fault, and how much lies with the state? Both Prop A and Prop 30 passed in November, giving a boost to educational funding. But California is still in 49th place nationwide when it comes to spending on education. The Save CCSF Coalition, an organization comprised of faculty and students, is staging a protest at San Francisco's City Hall today from 4 to 6 to demand the city take a stronger stance in defending educational funding for CCSF. So what options does the school have if the funding runs dry? And what is in store for CCSF? This is a school that educates 85,000 students, and they've got 2,500 employees. Joining us to talk about this today is Larry Kamer. He's media representative for the administration of CCSF. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks very much.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Chanel Williams, elected president of the Associated Students and one of the founders and leaders for the Save CCSF Coalition. Associated Students works to voice student concerns and advocates on behalf of the student body. And Chanel joins us here in studio. Hi. Chanel. Thanks for coming in.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Karen Saginaw, leader of the Academic Senate. Karen is the elected leader of the City College faculty and represents the faculty at Board of Trustees meetings. The Faculty Association of the California Community Colleges recently awarded Karen with the Full-Time Faculty Member of the Year Award. And Karen joins us in studio. Hi, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning, and congratulations on your award.
Thank you.
So let's first off go back in time and talk about why we're here today. Karen, why don't you give us a brief overview of why City College is in trouble today?
So, try to keep it brief. The show cause finding that we got in, we're told about in July, it was decided in June, we were told about it in July, had 14 recommendations. They could be grouped roughly into three areas, some having to do with finances, some having to do with governance issues, and some having to do with student learning outcomes, which is the process of demonstrating that that instruction is really focused on student learning.
So what happened when the school, when the commission visited CCSF?
So that was last March. We had written a self-evaluation report, which they, we had sent to them, and then they came and talked to many, many people and heard all kinds of things in addition to the report, different from what was in the report and so forth. And they wrote a report themselves, the folks who visited wrote a report. They sent that report to the commission, right? And then the commission gave us a summary statement with the 14 recommendations. So the report that was written by the visiting team is actually 60 pages long, and it says all kinds of things in it, some of which are not necessarily consistent with each other in some places. So it's a little hard to read that report and figure out exactly what it is that, that they would like for us to do. And then there are the 14 recommendations and the, the actual sanction of show cause.
And Chanel, you're one of the founders of the Save CCSF Coalition. I understand a number of students and faculty are actually walking out of class today to raise awareness about this. When you meet people who don't know much about City College and what's currently happening, how do you describe how we got here today?
Well, there's so many people that are concerned about what's happening at City College. And when I meet people, they're so shocked. They're in complete shock that we're at this place, knowing how amazing our institution is. I mean, we've been around for 77 years. We provide transfer services, GED, vocational services. We have 1 in 3 folks in San Francisco have been touched by our college. And so when I run into people, they're in complete shock that we received such a harsh sanction, given that we had no prior sanction from the ACCJC. So people are very concerned, and we're going to have thousands of people in front of City Hall today to protect our college.
Because when you do read about this, people say, wait, City College could possibly close?
Yes.
How is this possible?
It is a mystery, especially going back to the visiting team and the reports. We saw in the visiting team report that there were a lot of good things in there about our college, and then we get to this place where we're being placed on show cause, which is such a gap for all of us. We're wondering how we got to a show cause with no warning, no probation.
What does show cause mean exactly?
Show cause is one step before closure, and okay, you have to show cause why our college should remain open and accredited.
And again, that's Chanel Williams. She's one of the founders of the Save CCSF Coalition. Larry Kamer is media rep for the administration of CCSF. And Larry, how do you describe how we got here today when people say, wait a minute, Larry, CCSF might close? How do you respond to that?
Well, a couple of things, and I echo Karen and Chanel's ardor and zeal for making sure people understand what a special institution this is. I think this is one of the reasons why there is such understandable outpouring of emotion and support that you'll see today at City Hall and in other forums. But I think you have to go back to the very origins of what accreditation is all about. Mm-hmm. You know, accreditation is a peer review process that we submit to voluntarily. It is not a regulatory process where an agency says, this is what you must do. These are standards that community colleges set and adhere to. In return, they have the right to grant degrees and credits and transfers and financial aid and participate in sports and all kinds of other things that we come to take for granted for a college. Well, that's all tied up in accreditation. The accreditation process comes around every 6 years. 6 years ago, the ACCJC, which is our accrediting body, gave us a number of things that it wanted to see addressed that it came back 6 years later and said we had either not addressed or had inadequately addressed, and cited, as Karen pointed out, 14 total recommendations, pretty severe recommendations, having to do with the unsustainability of our finances, the lack of data in making decisions and planning, the lack of investment in things like technology and infrastructure, and the fact that 92% of our budget was going to salaries, benefits, and retirement. Which, if you think about a $185 million budget and do the math, that leaves very little money for everything else that is required for running a college.
Wait, 92% of the budget?
Yes.
That seems really high.
Well, of course, one of the things you have to bear in mind is
high, and even high by community college standards. And both the Accreditation Commission and FICMAT, the Fiscal Crisis Management Team, which we, City College, asked the state to send in and look over our books and do a complete audit and operational report, verified that, you know, we have just this unsustainably high amount of money going into salaries, benefits, and retirement. This is not to say that our teachers do not deserve to be paid well. I don't think that's what anybody's saying. But I think what we're saying is we have passed a tipping point where we have a sustainable organization that can run with the kind of funding that we are getting, and the vast majority of that comes from the state of California, even with the addition of Proposition A, $14 million, $15 million or so, that we'll have for 8 years.
Well, and on this point, just quickly, isn't it also true that teachers took another 8.8% pay cut this semester, and 88 part-time teachers and faculty were not rehired?
That's correct, and also classified staff were laid off. One of the things you have to bear in mind when you talk about the percentage that we pay for salaries, it is higher than we would like, but when you say, oh, that sounds like such a huge amount of the budget, our actual product, right? It's not like we're selling stuff, right?
Right.
What else is it that we're supposed to be spending money on? Well, obviously, it has to be the maintenance of facilities. And, of course, a lot of that ends up being personnel costs, right? You have to pay plumbers, right? We have to pay for technology. Well, in addition to buying computers, which, of course, we are very behind on, and we would very much want to increase that, but at the same time, a lot of that is personnel costs, keeping things running. Personnel costs are so much of what we're doing. We're not, you know, we don't have a lot of stuff. Mm. It's interaction with the students is our real product, and that really is a personnel type of thing. So, yes, we want to have more money for these other things. The downturn, the economic downturn, meant that we had delayed technology. We had delayed some building repairs. So there were things that we want to have the money for those other things. But it's not outrageous that there's some stuff we should be buying instead.
It actually is kind of outrageous. It's high even by community college standards. All community colleges are in the same business of not producing stuff, but producing education. And that is what we do. What makes City College different, though, is our vast reach throughout the city, our large number of facilities, the degree to which our compensation outstripped our ability to pay for it. Now, that's a really tough thing to talk about. You're talking about people's salaries. You're talking about people's livelihoods. We know these are human beings we're talking about. These aren't just numbers on a page. They're tough decisions that affect people's lives. But what we're all about, what everyone is about, is saving this college for our students and for our community. And that means there are tough decisions that affect teachers. I'm sure Chanel will tell you about things that have, you know, that have affected students, our classified, and others. So we get that, but it still has to get done.
Chanel. I just want to speak to the 92%. That is not an accurate percentage at this point. Teachers as well as staff have taken an 11.6% reduction in benefits and salary. So that 92% is not accurate. And actually, other community colleges in the area, which are not even comparable because we're the largest in the nation for a community college, have an 85% rate. And we're the largest in the nation. So I think that we're not exorbitant.
City College is not the largest community college in the nation.
We had 110,000 students at one point, and that's been reduced.
We did at one point, but now we're hovering around 80,000, 85,000. We're the largest single district college, one of them in the nation. But there are other, if you look at Peralta or L.A. or San Diego, these are multi-campus districts that have more students than we do.
They're actually multiple colleges. They're one district and multiple colleges. So we are the single largest college.
But the point is, whether it's 85% or 92%, it is an unsustainable number given what resources are available for us from the state. Everyone agrees that those numbers have been dropping and that the state of California needs to invest more in community colleges. We'd love to see that. But our job is to make sure this college can do what it can do and be the best that it can be with the resources that we have.
So the 92% that you mentioned was the figure last summer, and of course we have been working on it since then. As we've just heard, there have been definitely cuts. The unions agreed to pay cuts. Then there were, of course, pay cuts imposed that were not agreed to. And we worked very hard to increase the revenue side of the picture. That 92% was before Prop 30 passed and before Prop A passed. Now, the Prop A money has not kicked in yet. We will be getting that next year, right? But that is something that, that changes the equation. So there's really two parts to this here. The reason we have only 85,000 instead of 100,000, of course, is that the number of classes have been reduced. That change in number results people who wanted to get an education and were turned away. So it's a loss of opportunity. What you want to do
that,
is make it sustainable
by both
sides.
That's certainly not the view that the state chancellor has. I mean, the view that the state chancellor has articulated and others have said is, you know, I mean, you can look at both sides of this equation. And the community colleges up and down California are suffering from lower enrollments. That seems to be a trend when the economy improves, that people don't look so urgently to community colleges for job retraining or immediate kinds of opportunities. So we're not alone in a soft enrollment problem, which has exacerbated our overall financial issue. So I'm not so sure it's because classes have been cut because resources have been cut.
It's one of the factors. Actually, you and I were at a meeting with a gentleman from the state chancellor's office the other day who pointed out that one of the reasons for the softening of enrollment is that when classes had to be cut in spite of high demand last year and the year before in the economic downturn, a lot of the folks that got turned away were the people who would have been starting at that point. And so he said one of the factors in soft enrollment is that we don't have the people as many people who started a year ago and now would be going into their second year at community college. It's one of the factors. Yes, indeed, it's true that when the economy improves, demand does decrease. That is definitely a factor.
Also, just want to put out a number. In California, 500,000 students have been turned away from community college. 500,000, half a million students. So, yes, this is the state. And, you know, since we're here in the state, we're part of that. And we're losing students every day. 500,000.
And that 500,000 was people who sought to enroll and couldn't get in?
Sought to enroll.
Wow. That is Chanel Williams. She's the elected president of the Associated Students, one of the founders and leaders for the Save Community College of San Francisco Coalition. Today, they are walking out of class to protest just the changes that have been made, and we'll talk about how students have and teachers have been affected. And then there's going to be a rally, Save CCSF rally, in front of San Francisco City Hall today at 4 o'clock. We're also joined by Karen Saginaw, leader of the Academic Senate. She's the elected leader of the City College faculty and represents the Faculty Board of Trustee Meetings. She was recently awarded with the Full-Time Faculty Member of the Year Award by the Faculty Association of California Community Colleges. Larry Kamer is media representative for the administration of CCSF. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special edition of Your Call. We are talking about the accreditation crisis at CCSF. Tomorrow marks the deadline for the college to submit a report advocating for why it should remain open. Since July, the college has had to make massive changes to its infrastructure and spending in order to adhere to the Accrediting Commission's guidelines for improving the school. So we talked about the budget and the salaries. And before we move on, Larry, what are you hearing from administrators? What sort of changes do they want to make when it comes to the budget?
Well, I think you have to take the big view of everything that has happened since July when we received this severe show cause report. Because, we were very focused today in this discussion about things that are not going right or things that we would rather have played out differently, but you don't want to do a disservice to the hundreds and hundreds of people who have put thousands and thousands of hours into reforming and in some cases even revolutionizing the way City College does its business that are going to be reflected in this March 15th report that we'll send off tomorrow. Everything from, you know, the seminal decisions about our mission statement, improving the process of data gathering, improving the process of SLOs, student learning outcomes that Karen talked about before, looking hard at how we can better provide student services and put more resources into the classroom, more resources into counseling and so on, looking at better administrative structures that are more consistent with the way successful community colleges operate, putting more money into our physical resources, you know, classrooms,
and so this is all going into tomorrow's report?
This is all action against every one of these is going to be documented in tomorrow's report.
Thank you very much for bringing that up, actually, since I'm one of those folks who spent the thousands of hours. I spent well over 1,000 hours working on things related to this report, and other faculty have really have pitched in very, very hard. And one of the areas in which you can really see a ton of improvement is in the SLO area. There were three recommendations that were specifically targeted to that, and on those three, I think we document tremendous progress, right? Have we made sufficient progress? We really, really hope so. We don't know yet what ACCJC will say, but we have worked extremely hard, and you can look at our reports online. We have just so much documentation online. You can look and see what the SLOs are for every course, every program, and what's been done to assess them, and all the kinds of really creative work faculty have been doing to make this this documentation as useful as possible, so that we really fulfill, you know, the goals of
ACCJC. And again, that's the student learning objectives.
Right, the student learning objectives, yeah. The goals of ACC, actually student learning outcomes, the goals of ACCJC, as they announce, are to assure quality and to help colleges improve, right? And this process that we're going through, there are areas of conflict, but there are also areas in which it is very much the case that we've all pitched in and looked to help.
Because this is really
to help the college improve.
Right, an opportunity for you all to get together to talk about what changes and improvements you'd like to see.
Frankly, that this thing could have worked is a collaborative process. Faculty were incredibly instrumental in the work, but also everyone from our elected trustees through the administration, through our classified staff, the people who work largely behind the scenes, our students, our donors who have stood with us. There has been a real kind of community of CCSF that has shown an ability to work together. Right. It would be wrong to say we agree on everything, and you'll hear later on today in the protest that there are still some issues that people feel strongly about. But I think it would do a disservice to all of the work that's gone into this report to just focus on those remaining things where we're in disagreement. Let's look at all the ways in which we've fundamentally started the process of reform at City College.
And I just want to take a phone call before we go to break. Let's hear from Bill in San Francisco, who is the Labor and Community Studies Chair at CCSF. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose. I think it's important for the I'd like to communicate to the listeners. We all have worked very hard at the college to improve in every way that we can. But there's something as a labor relations specialist, I can tell you that interwoven with this set of changes is something very deeply damaging to the college. You know, most community colleges are in the high 80s for their labor costs. And what's happening is that the voters showed confidence in us by giving us the money from Prop 30 and Measure A. And now they're shifting that money away from the secretaries, away from the janitors, away from the teachers, away from our students, and giving it to these high-priced administrators. For instance, Scott Agrella, who's the special trustee, gets $1,000.
You know that's absolute nonsense, right?
Excuse me, Larry. So Larry's a spokesperson for that whole kind of Walmartization of City College. They're trying to take this money and give it to these high-paid consultants, and it's deeply damaging to our students and our teachers. We want to alert the taxpayers. They should protest this. The money should go to the students and the people who directly serve the students.
Well, and thank you for calling. Let's just get this on the table, because Prop A, which we approved, San Francisco citizens approved in November, would raise between $14 and $16 million for CCSF annually. Many argue that the fund should be used to offset and pay for these cuts, but much of the revenue is being put in the reserve fund. Is that right, Chanel?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, because both of our faculty and staff unions funded and led the campaign for Prop A and Prop 30, and they're the ones that are suffering from these layoffs and from these cuts, and they led that campaign.
And this reserve needs to be at a certain level for City College to remain open?
The reserve is only required to be at a 5% level, and we're being showed a budget by our chief financial officer, an eight-year budget, to beef up our reserve to 8%, which is not necessary.
All right. Well, this is important. We'll get Larry to respond to this right after the break. Today, it's a special edition of Your Call, and we are talking about the accreditation crisis at City College of San Francisco. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is a special edition of Your Call here on Local Public Radio. We invite you to join in today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
A special edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the accreditation crisis at City College of San Francisco, which educates 85,000 students and employs 2,500 teachers, janitors, you name it. Tomorrow marks the deadline for the City College of San Francisco to submit a report advocating for why it should remain open. Since July, City College has had to make massive changes to its infrastructure and spending in order to adhere to the Accrediting Commission's guidelines for improving the school. And we'd love to hear from you. If you go to CCSF, if you're a teacher there, if you just care about this important institution in San Francisco, what are your thoughts about the crisis that the school is facing today? And what questions do you have? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment on our website. You can find the show at KALW.org. Today we're joined by Chanel Williams, elected president of the Associated Students, one of the founders of the Save CCSF Coalition. Karen Saginaw is leader of the Academic Senate. She's the elected leader of the City College faculty and represents faculty at Board of Trustee meetings. And Larry Kamer is media representative for the administration of CCSF. And Larry, I want to get your comment on Prop A, because we are talking about a lot of money here, between $14 and $16 million. What will be done with this money?
A is going to be spent exactly as the voters intended it to be spent. Any claims to the contrary ignore the facts, and I think try and keep alive an issue that has been settled by the board in the adoption of its budget. The board is for the first time looking at, and this is a board of trustees that is elected by the people of San Francisco. They were elected on the same ballot as Proposition A. They are going to begin to compose an oversight committee, as required by the language of Prop A, so there will be yet another oversight body to ensure that this money is spent exactly as the voters intended. Now, we're talking about two separate issues when we start demonizing the need for reserves and Proposition A. City College has operated on an almost hand-to-mouth basis with very thin reserves, forcing it to go borrow, forcing it to spend money that it doesn't have to spend, and forcing us into a real period of financial peril over the last few years, which is not good for our students, it's not good for our community, it's not good for our teachers. So one of the things, consistent with the state chancellor's guidelines and with good practice, good financial management, the board is putting more money into reserves, as the Accreditation Commission suggested, and as FICMAT suggested. We're going to be able to do that. Now, let's keep things in perspective. Proposition 30, which the voters of California passed, thankfully, puts no new money in the City College or any community colleges. It avoids further cuts that, in our case, would have been devastating, because they would have been in mid-year, short-term, very difficult. began in December. It's about $15 million a year for 8 years. And the language is very clear on how it should be spent, which is exactly how it's going to get spent, for helping City College with educational services, other operations of the college, and to ensure that that money can never get taken away. Now, if we lose our accreditation, which is a very real possibility, that all changes. That all changes. So we have to keep in mind that efforts to ensure accreditation have been, they've been very high, they've been the highest possible priority because we've had such short time to deal with the repairs and the fixes and the reforms that we need to be made. But
I actually wanted to make a point. one of the Board of Trustees members today will be speaking out at our rally about Prop A and about some of the pressure that they have been put under by this interim administration to go against things that they don't feel are right. So that's going to be awesome to have our Board of Trustee representative speaking at the rally today. And I don't want to put his name out on air. I just encourage everyone to come and listen and see him speak out, which is really encouraging to us as students. I also want to point out that 80% of community colleges have pulled from their reserves during this time of defunding from the state. So this is not unusual for a community college to pull from our reserves. And I wanted to talk about the collaboration piece. In fall, students that wanted to get on work groups over the summer were told you have to submit a resume, you have to read a 300-page document, you have to take this quiz, and then we'll let you on the work group. And so that was really discouraging over the summer. And then finally in the fall, when they get on the work groups, they're told, you know, they try to speak out with their voices about what they want to see happen, and it's not listened to, it's not respected, and we have these focus groups with these students, and they said that they don't feel that their voices are being heard and that there's already an agenda in place. So the collaboration piece is not quite accurate, what he's saying.
Larry, what about that? Chanel is saying that a lot of students feel like their voices are not being heard in this process.
Yeah, I don't hear that a lot. We have seen more than 300 students participating in these focus groups. We've had students represented on every one of the 15 work groups. They continue to be. You know, there are always going to be people who feel that their word is not heard, and you know, we do as good a job as we can to be inclusive and respectful. But I don't think the numbers support the claim.
Well, let's ask students, because we've got a number of people on the line. Let's go to Lalo Gonzalez, who is a student at CCSF. Hi, Lalo. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks. Hey, before you give us your comment, do you feel like your voice has been heard during this process?
No, not at all. I mean, the 300 students that the administrator is actually referring to, I mean, we had, with one rally that we had nearly 400 people come out to actually have their voices heard. And so for him to claim that over this like time period of I forgot how many meetings it was, only had three voices representing nearly 80,000 people is absolutely ridiculous. I think he made a great point, though, so I wouldn't even want to really try to get away from that. So I think he did a great job as far as like explaining how like our voices weren't really being used.
And how is this affecting students?
Well, I mean, as far as the entire process.
Just the crisis that CCSF is dealing with right now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think there's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of misinformation. I think I really wanted to point out was the administration's selling point of that there is a spending crisis, and also going along with the state officials that there's a budget crisis, which is not necessarily true. It's actually what it is. It's a priority crisis. This is a political a statement, basically, to put higher education at the bottom end of the priority list and make prison spending number one. And so this can completely be changed overnight. It could be overhauled. I think the administration and the state officials should work together and come up and basically challenge the ACJC, and also tell the state and be like, hey, you know, you should be funding this school. Like, it shouldn't be happening, instead of actually accepting the entire accreditation process and actually just starting to make more cuts. Because this whole idea that they're actually of long-term stability and success is absolutely false. Like, how is it supposed to be? It's stability and success for who? Because it's actually cutting opportunity from thousands of students who rely on this college specifically to kind of like give them that opportunity to join the workforce and be productive people in society.
Well, Lalo, what question would you, do you have for Larry, who Larry Kamer, who's the media rep for administration of CCSF?
I'm sorry, what was that? What
question do you have for Larry Kamer, who's with who's the rep for the administration of CCSF?
Wow, what questions. I don't even know who this administrator is. So
well, I mean, if you're saying that you don't feel like you have a voice, now you do. So what question do you have?
I feel like any of the questions that we even, like, try to get to the administration, we're on the opposite side of the spectrum as far as, like, how we believe that we should push forward. I believe in organizing the students and being as a much more democratic process, and along with the faculty, to fight for our own interests. Now the administration has made their stance, basically saying that no, there's no way that we're going to join you guys unless you join us by passing austerity measures. And so, just like these questions, for like going back and forth with them, it just has been basically like a dead end conversation.
I have a question for Larry Kamer.
No.
Why won't the administration conduct town hall forums with students at our campuses? We met with the chancellor and requested that she have town hall forums at all the campuses, given that this is a crisis. This is a huge issue. We have 85,000 students, and the focus groups that he's referring to are only about student services. And it's about what do you want to see, what do you think are the best student services, which ones, because it was a way for them to look at, oh, what should we cut, basically, in student services, which I think we should have all student services. And so those focus group with the 300 students was not about accreditation.
So students really wanted it more of a town hall format.
Yes, we requested that from the chancellor to have town hall forums, and so I want to know, why do we have a chancellor that is not committed to reaching out to students? I sit on the Participatory Governance Council, and we've requested for her to send out emails and had to put pressure for her to even send out an email to the student body about the accreditation process. So I want to know, why is our chancellor not having these town hall forums, and why is our chancellor stating that she does not support equity?
Larry, what about that? Why weren't town hall forums conducted?
Well, I was in that meeting, and Chanel and I sat right across the table from each other. I don't know if it's accurate to say that the chancellor doesn't support equity. I think, you know, if you look at...
We have a tape.
If you look at the 42 years that this chancellor has spent in the community college system and in her professional career fighting exactly for things like equity and access, I think that's just a ridiculous charge. As far as town hall meetings are concerned, this was not a request. It was a demand. And nonetheless,
I requested twice.
We said we thought it was a pretty good idea, and that we would leave it on the table and work out the details.
No, you guys refused. And why is the administration not trying to help students be informed? And why is this all top down?
Okay, well, as we pointed out in that meeting, and I'll point out again, you know, transparency is one of the three pillars that we have built this response on. The first being that we take responsibility for the issues that are in front of us. The second being that we fix our own problems here and not ask for someone else to come in and fix them for us. And the third is that we do it in as transparent a way as we can. That's why every single document that we've talked about is up on the website and has been since July for anyone, students, the community, faculty, media, to have a look at it. So I don't think the charge of transparency holds any water.
Can I comment on these goals?
And as far as the town hall meetings, as you point out, we've had them. We've had
we
it was one of the
them.
First things. It was one of the first things this chancellor did when she arrived as an interim vice chancellor. One of her first kind of orders was to set up these meetings around various campuses. You yourself said there were 300 students who participated in these things. Why more students don't participate? You know, we do our best, but at some point, we understand people have a lot of things on their plates, that students have a lot of things on.
That's not true. It's not true. Anything that you just said is not true. We have
well,
not had town hall forums. You just said that
agenda,
we had only had focus groups with 300 students, and now you're saying that we had these town hall forums that have never happened, and the chancellor on tape said that she refuses to have it.
Well, let me just jump in here, because we've got full lines on this. So why don't we go through a number of our callers, because we've got just about 10 minutes left, and I want to make sure people are heard during the show today. It's a special edition of Your Call, and we are talking about the accreditation crisis at City College of San Francisco with Chanel Williams, elected president of the Associated Students, Karen Saginaw, leader of the Academic Senate, and Larry Kamer, media rep for the administration of CCSF. And let's hear from Wanda in Oakland. Hi, Wanda.
Hi. I'm a retired City College instructor, and I would like to know two things, and I would like specific answers. What part of this 92 or 86% budget that is paid to upper echelon administrators? And the second question, I would like a specific answer to this, is what is this chancellor paid? I've heard over the years a lot of rumors about her being very distant, not really there for the school. And what is she paid?
All right.
And what are the upper echelon? I'm not talking about classified, the people who do all the work, or the janitors.
Right.
What percentage of these 86% or 92 was paid to the administrators, top administrators?
All right. So question on salaries. Thank you. And we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But I want to make sure we get other listeners in on this conversation. Let's go to Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy.
Hi there. I have two questions. I've read on these little leaflets that are around town advertising the demonstration today that this accreditation commission has ties to public education and kind of is might have a motive privatizing parts of City College, you know, aspects of City College. So I wanted to know about where privatization fits in. And I also was wondering about the position of the union that represents the classified employees, SEIU 10-1. I was wondering what position they're taking on, you know, how the money's being spent and the students' and teachers' objections.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Judy. Let's go next to Harry in San Francisco. Hi, Harry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes. Good morning. I would need 15 minutes to detail why this is absurd, but my understanding is, and I hope it's not correct, is that City College is going towards a regimen where only degree students will be the ones who will be taking classes. So the people taking a class that want to go to French, that want to go to France, can't do that anymore. And I also like to point out that the fact that students don't participate might have to do something with the fact that they're working two jobs to try to pay those the atrocious tuition, which has gone up by so much. And for them, for people who can earn minimum wage at best, it's pretty hard for them to be paying that tuition unless they come from a wealthy family.
Yeah, well, thank you. We actually have a colleague who used to go to City College in the 70s, and it was free back then. What does it cost today?
It's 46 a unit now, and it's and actually, students that have 90 units are going to be required to pay out-of-state tuition. It's coming down the pipeline. So out-of-state tuition is $206 a unit.
If you're a full-time student, what's your bill yearly?
Your bill as a full-time student, you're looking at about a couple thousand dollars.
All right, well, thank you, Harry.
I understand, too, that the college has... and this is something people need to understand about the way community colleges are funded, is those rates are set by in Sacramento. So if it costs more to live in San Francisco than it does in Bakersfield, you know, that's unfortunately borne by people in San Francisco. We have a little bit of leeway on what we can do with student fees and international student fees, but not with basic tuition. That's that we don't have any leeway on. And so it puts even greater pressure on the college to manage its funds efficiently.
Well, let's address some of these questions. Wanda wants to know what percentage of the 92% in the budget goes toward the upper echelon of CCSF. Who can answer that one?
Well, it's interesting. In the accreditation report, one of the things that we got dinged for was having too few administrators. Now, this is not something you hear very much when you're talking about big organizations and big government organizations and big educational institutions. But they cited that we had only 37 administrators running programs for 85,000-90,000 students. Just in my own case, you know, I've stepped in on a contract basis to help deal with media and communications issues. Because the person who had this job 3 years ago retired and was not replaced. That happened all over the place where administrators were doing two and three jobs at a time, not for more pay. It burned out a lot of them, but it also created a real kind of span of control, which really did affect the quality of administration and of, and the way the college runs.
And that's one of the areas, in fact, in which faculty were supportive of, you know, of course we need enough administrators to operate. But it's also one of the areas in which we've been disappointed in terms of the collaboration. The goals we have for collaboration and transparency, where we are hoping to see even more of that going forward. And because, as I had said earlier, the areas in which we now are in conflict are the areas in which those things really fell through. There's an administrative reorg that's now ongoing. A major piece of that is how the department chairs were going to be affected, got no input from any faculty member until it was unveiled as a surprise at an October board meeting. And there has been attempts to understand it since then. We were told that it was a best practice. We've asked, where is this best practice? We have not found out, really. We've talked to other colleges. We find, yes, they have more administrators, but they also have department chairs that they depend on very heavily. Right now, we're in the middle of a process of the administrative reorg, where all of the administrators in student services, all of the administrators in instruction, that is all the administrators who work who are really direct with the educational process, have all been given their notice, right? Their jobs all end on June 30th, and the college is going to hire replacements. Now, some of these folks can reapply for their jobs and may be hired back, but of course, there's no guarantee. It's a public
thing. That's a legal requirement, Karen.
Right.
And that's being done because it's a legal requirement that those jobs, as currently defined, don't exist anymore. And we have a legal requirement to tell people that.
So that's the reason that made the jobs not exist anymore was a rewriting of every single job description. The folks that were hired there, and I've talked to somebody the other day who he was only hired a few years ago through a very complete process. He's doing really the same job he was doing then. There doesn't seem to be a good reason to say, oh, no, you can't do that same job anymore. We're going to change the job descriptions for all the jobs and require everybody to reapply. We're concerned about this, right? It really is the administration's call on how they on doing this. But we're concerned about the stability issue, because that was one of the things in the accreditation report. We were told not only did you not have enough administrators, but your administration was unstable. You had too many people who were interim. The future to have more transparency and more collaboration on these tough issues.
I want to get to the other questions. Wanda also wanted to know, do you know what the chancellor was paid? The last chancellor, according to the Chronicle, Chancellor Don Griffin, who stepped down last year, was paid $287,000 plus a car allowance. And according to this piece, the trustees had to find a new chancellor at about $150,000. Does that sound right to you, Bob?
Our chancellor, Thelma Scott Skillman, is actually pulling from a pension as well as getting a salary. I believe she's making about $400,000+ currently. Our special trustee is making about $1,000 a day. Pamela Fisher, I don't know how much salary she got away with, but I mean, if we talk about fiscal responsibility, I mean, we have a lot of consultants, a lot of people that are pulling money from our college during this accreditation crisis. And I mean, the numbers are out there. I mean, that is an accurate figure.
Quickly, Larry, on the numbers, because I want to make sure we answer the other questions. What is the chancellor's salary?
So the interim chancellor, we've had three chancellors in the last, just in the last year plus, right? Chancellor Griffin, who was full-time and who left at the salary and benefits that you talked about. The interim chancellor, Pamela Fisher, who succeeded him, came in and was paid less money than
what's
Chancellor
the number?
Griffin.
Well, according to this article, it was $150,000. That's what they had the authority to spend.
Talking about for Pamela Fisher?
Yeah, I think that may be what she was actually paid, but I think annualized it was something more like $240,000.
What about Thelma Scott Skillman?
And plus housing
and Dr. Scott Skillman is on the same, basically the same contract,
and what
a
is,
one-year contract. What is the average
teacher salary?
It's hard to figure because we have so many part-time faculty, so it's hard to figure an average salary.
For full-time faculty, the scale goes from roughly, I think, at the bottom, 40,000 a year, and ends, well, it used to end at about 94,000 a year. Of course, now that's been dropped by, you know, 5%, 10%, I don't know, so it lands under 90,000 a year.
Shameful.
All right, and Judy's question. Hold on, Larry, we're just about out of time, and I really want to get these other questions. Judy has seen leaflets around town talking about the Accreditation Commission's ties to privatizing parts of CCSF. Chanel, I know a lot of students are talking about this.
Yes, we've done quite a bit of research on who the ACCJC is, and actually they have 25% of community colleges on show cause right now, and we know that... that they, the board that accredits the Accreditation Commission, that actually has the, I believe he's the president of University of Phoenix, sits on that board. Is it 25% on sanction, I'm sorry, 25% of schools are on sanction in California.
And do you know where, what is the union's position, the union that represents classified employees? Does anyone know
that? They are accepting the cuts at this time, and it's unfortunate. We want to build unity with between students, faculty, and staff. We all have to come together because united we stand, divided we fall, and we love our college. We don't want to see our college downsized. We are seeing that they're going to eliminate a lot of ethnic studies and diversity classes. They're consolidating all of the retention centers. They've cut all of the part-time counseling. This is an outrage, and we as San Francisco have to stand up, and we have to be informed.
And Harry wanted to know, is it true that only degreed students can now take classes, as opposed to if I want to learn French or take an exercise class, I can't?
The movement in California, not just at City College, is to get rid of classes that aren't leading to a degree. So it's not that you have to have a degree, but it's basically transfer certificates going straight into a job. And there's this whole focus on the education must lead directly to a degree. This is part of the movement to cut down on the number of units students can take, right? So this is, it's difficult to cut off. The goal is to cut off sort of recreational classes, but along the line, they hit a lot of other classes that are being cut off.
All right, and we've got just about 2 minutes, so I want to give all of you final thoughts. Chanel Williams, elected president of the Associated Students, final thoughts.
Yes, so we have solutions. We're not saying that we don't want to fix our college and address these, some of the issues that we have, but there are other solutions. And like Lalo said earlier, it's about priorities. We don't want to, this is an issue of equity. We are losing thousands of students. And by downsizing our community college, we're going to lose 1,000 more. And the mission of community college is to serve the community. Eliminating cultural enrichment and lifelong learning from our mission statement is not right.
Thank you. And Larry Kamer, final thoughts from you, media rep for administration of CCSF.
Yeah, thanks. First, thanks for having me on. I would say this, that we are all about trying to change and repair City College, which is in many ways as great an institution as it is, has many things wrong with it that need. And so change has been what we've been all about for the last 8 months. That's not made any easier when there are a number of voices that want to just change the subject. We're all about changing the college.
And Karen, final thoughts quickly?
We're also very interested in working towards change, working towards it with collaboration, with transparency. We're very open to working together.
That's Karen Saginaw, leader of the Academic Senate. And thank you so much for listening to today's special edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Special thanks to Becca Hoekstra, who produced today's show. Thank you. Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.